Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying, skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com. Live at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. Another nice looking day. A little bit warmer than it's been the last couple of days, but still, it is nice weather. Hope everybody enjoying that. And welcome into The Drive on this Wednesday. We've got the regular grouping here on a Wednesday. It's Bill and Dan, Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover, and Drew at the controls. So I hope everybody is doing well. JC, how's it going?
Doing good. How about y'all?
Doing pretty well. Got a little was actually productive. Got some yard work and stuff done today before the next round of leaves fall. You can tell Dan doesn't have a yard that he has to keep up because he was asking, "Are the leaves starting?"
Oh yeah, how's the yard looking, Bill? Yeah,
man, yard looks great right now. That's what I told Kathy. I said, "Look, enjoy it. Take some pictures, because I'm sure by the time I get home, there'll be another layer of leaves that have fallen." But
it's. I don't have trees except toward the bottom. But I have ant bed after ant bed.
Well,
after
the
all the rain,
that is the craziest thing. How fast they can build.
How many
beds
are there that we don't know of. Yes. And then you have rain. You look out there and there's 17 ant beds built up in your yard.
I was on ant bed duty. Yesterday was sort of the prelim before I did the yard stuff. It was ant beds and a little bit of trimming.
I did it the last couple of days and started kind of in shifts cutting my grass down. Maybe have one more time. I mean, it's still warm enough, but the growing season is about done. So I'm cutting it down some and kind of mulching, and then I'll probably go back over with a bagger here to keep the dead grass.
That's what I did. I sort of vacuumed the back and got a little. Our old buddy Chuck, Dan, would say he was, you know,
snakes in the gutter.
No, a lawn service as well. No, I mean, I always talk about, hey, you know, in the spring, you're not going to have to worry about it until it's constantly 70 degrees at night.
Yes.
And once it cools off enough that the temperature drops below 70,
correct,
grass doesn't grow much.
Yep. No. And so it's slowed down a lot. Last night felt great. Now it's warmed back
up again
today, but should be fairly nice this weekend. I think Athens is like 82 or so, but
yeah.
I mean, that's a 3:45 Eastern time kick.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll start to be sun going down behind the stadium even
before the game is over.
Yeah, probably my halftime or so.
Sometime.
So it shouldn't be too bad. Should be pretty comfortable. And so, but other than that, pretty good.
Well, it has been a while since Auburn has come away from Athens.
2005.
You know, yeah, almost 20 years. That's hard to believe, considering the way this series went for 100 years.
Especially for much of the 80s and
the 70s, 80s,
early
90s.
Yes.
I mean, it was like
the road team.
Yeah,
it was road team. Yeah, winning streaks basically. Almost felt like the 4 or 5 overtime loss here kind of,
That may have
even though Georgia won it,
tilted it. Yeah,
it was like, okay, man, that was one you had and let go. And since that time, it's gone back and forth, and now it's been all
Georgia
fourth.
Has dominated for the last 20 years.
It's Auburn's lost 7 in a row. I mean, the 2017 game here, and then lost
the
to
first 20.
Yes, and then lost
the
to
regular
them,
season.
Yeah,
game.
And then lost to in the SEC championship game. Other than that, it's been 7 straight now for Georgia. And other than last season,
there have been some
comfortable going to Athens. I wrote about it today. Going to Athens has been just brutally bad.
For by far the most difficult place, or when you look at the scores and you look at the games that Auburn has traveled.
Yeah, Tuscaloosa.
Baton Rouge had its moments. But, I mean, Auburn only won there once in
the
years.
But they led a bunch of those games.
In so many games.
Auburn played their fair share of close games.
They led a lot of those games.
Yeah.
And should have won three or four of them probably.
In Athens, it seems like Auburn usually is okay on their first possession,
and then the eight consecutive losses is 264-91. That's the scoring margin.
Wow.
The last six trips, 47 total points.
We reminisced yesterday with Andy a little bit. Maybe this was off the air, that Auburn led late in the 07 and 09 games. The blackout. Does Auburn lead when the fourth quarter starts?
No, Auburn was down. Auburn was down Georgia, like 31-20 or something. It was like 11. Auburn led to the middle of the second quarter.
Yeah. Auburn had a second half lead in the blackout, and then it's pretty much all Georgia.
2009, Auburn interception leads. Coming out of the halftime. It's a tight game. You throw an interception out coming out of half. No, that was 2014.
I believe it's a 14. I think it's Auburn.
Yes. 16, Auburn should have
correct.
Won.
13-7 game where you just run the ball. Correct.
Just run the ball. Don't throw it at all.
I'm pretty sure Auburn jumps out to an early like 14-0 lead in 09, and then Georgia fights back and wins a close game with a late touchdown. That's the year we were talking about it yesterday. That's the year between Matthew Stafford and Aaron Murray. That was sort of the iffy year at quarterback for Georgia.
That was Joe Cox.
Right. Who?
Yeah. Well, Sean Ealy was at running back.
Joe Cox, who we talked about a lot, Bill. Do you remember why?
No.
Joe Cox basically followed Mike Bobo everywhere as a coach. Was on his staffs at South Carolina and Colorado State, and I was always bringing him up as a potential addition to the Mike Bobo staffs here, just because he'd been a fixture. On that, and I think is he at Georgia right now? Is Joe Cox either at South Carolina? Maybe like he was
at South Carolina. I'll look and see.
Yeah, I want to say Joe Cox has resurfaced again as a coach with a prominent enough job. But yeah, that 09 game was probably the last time for a while at least that Auburn, you know, was in really good position going into the fourth quarter in a game in Athens.
He is Ole Miss's co OC and tight ends coach.
Huh.
Yes, Auburn, that game returned a kickoff to start the fourth quarter.
I think Charlie Weiss Jr. is the other OC in Ole Miss.
And to tie the game at 24. But Auburn led 14-0 in the first quarter, got down 24-17, returned a kickoff for a touchdown, and then Georgia scored with like 6 minutes left in that game. It's been no offense at all.
Yeah, you're right.
That's been the thing.
Georgia has shut Auburn down.
They haven't done anything, and we saw it. Kirby Smart, familiarity, and I saw Oklahoma do this last weekend a good bit too. Kirby Smart figured out against Gus Malzahn, when they substitute, you just hold your guys for a couple of seconds, and then you just casually jog them out there, and then you line up, and you look up, and there's 7 seconds left on the play clock.
There's no time to make any changes or do anything else. You
got to
snap the ball.
And Oklahoma did that some last weekend. They substituted a few guys and jogged them on, and you look up, and there's 6 or 7 seconds left, and you got to run a play. You don't have time to check out of those things. And Auburn started doing a little bit of it too. Auburn did a little bit themselves where it forced Oklahoma to have to call a timeout one time. And sooner or later – you're going to have to, as officials, figure out a way to, like, you don't have all day to do this. If you're substituting, you have a certain amount of time, and that's it.
The difficult thing about it is sometimes the offensive substitutions don't come immediately.
No.
I mean,
but
so.
Yeah, but I'm saying is that, but when you know you're substituting, you're okay, they made a substitution. Are we going to get our guys in? And once you get your guys in, then those guys have to go, and you have to, like, you don't
somebody
have
asked
20
me,
seconds.
Somebody asked me this weekend about that. So what is the pressure? What pressure is there on the defense to substitute
there's none.
Quickly?
There's none.
None.
That's the whole point.
That's what Jason's
point.
Talking about.
Take as much time as you can, other than
starting to send guy, like, once – if you look like you're going to make a substitution, then that guy's going to stand over the center and not allow them to snap the ball. Now, if you miss that window,
they can snap the ball and you're
done
playing 10 on 11.
Is there an official rule as far as when that window should expire?
That's what there needs to be.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's like you got
a amount of time.
You'd probably have
a situation like basketball where you'd need an official counting out
the question though is like, and I guess that's why, because there's no real way to know when that should start.
I would say it starts when you confirm with the offense that they're done substituting. You confirm
even
with
the guys aren't lined up yet.
I think you confirm with the offense that they've finished substituting, and then the moment that happens, the referees would start an 8 count or an 11 count.
And your guys have to be in place.
And I'd say that when that count expires,
you're snapping the ball.
You step away and the ball's live.
Yeah,
I mean, is this crazy?
That's what I was talking about.
I wonder how you confirm with an offense that they're done substituting. Would you designate maybe the guy with the green dot would have that responsibility to confirm with the referee?
See, that's the whole thing. I don't know how you would
either
get
someone
that done.
On the side. I think either someone on the either the head coach or the player with the green dot. I think would be the person you would authorize.
You'd have to have some way,
there probably should be a rule in place because there needs to be something putting pressure on the defense to finish their substitutions in a timely manner to get the game going.
Correct.
And that probably can't start until the offense has confirmed.
Yeah,
they've got their 11
on the field.
Yeah. But it would probably need to start there.
So Kirby kind of figured that out against Gus, and it really derailed the Auburn offense. I mean, and they were just more physical. I mean, they were better in every facet, and the fact that when they're taking the air out of the ball a little bit, that killed Auburn. So that inability to run the football have been huge keys in Athens. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a big key this weekend. But, you know, I have
to imagine between Hugh Freeze lamenting not running the football enough in the second half against Oklahoma, probably in the fourth quarter especially, and concern about this offense turning it over, if ever there was a moment to – And the fact that Auburn comes in fifth in the conference in yards per carry, like I would think if ever there was a time to at times throttle back on the especially the downfield passing and try to go to an offense that gives the ball more to the running backs than they have so far, I would think it would be against Georgia. But at the same time, you're probably going to need points beat this team.
That's the thing. The flip side of that is it's hard to go, hey, here we go. We're going to line up and run the football. And just do it.
Especially when you saw Georgia giving up chunks through the air.
Yes, and here's the thing. Yeah, Auburn has been really good. Auburn also leads the nation in 40-yard passing plays, four more than the next team.
That's crazy.
That's part of the reason why you're successful running the football, is because teams have had to worry about that. And so it's still going to be a numbers game. Now you have to – and we said it last week and it showed up Saturday – It's a numbers game to a point. In situations, the numbers should not matter. And I thought last weekend the numbers shouldn't matter. I don't care how many guys are in the box. If you've got first down at the 33-yard line with an 11-point lead and 11 minutes left in the game.
And you just ripped off a 22-yard run.
Numbers don't matter. We're running the football.
The numbers don't factor in something Bill observed during the Jarquez 22-yard run, which is – this Oklahoma defense that had been rock solid for moments in the game.
Did they not look like,
the game was over with at that point.
Yep.
I was like, look, okay, he just ran through guys.
The Jalen McLeod sack, the Jarquez run.
And he just ran through guys.
And Oklahoma players looked like,
that was first down. It was first down.
I know.
It's like when something that's not supposed to bend starts to bend a little bit, like a bridge or something.
It's going
to
break.
You started to see some bending in parts of the Oklahoma defense that hadn't been bending to that point in the game.
Yep.
And I think you can, they were an excellent work by Brent Venables and company to do this. I think they realized we really better start showing some looks that get Auburn to throw the football, because I don't think they wanted Auburn to keep running the football
at
that point.
And that's the thing. And here's the thing on the flip
and
side.
It's on Auburn to ignore those looks and keep running the ball.
Well, on the flip side of that, too, especially on second down, that's a 100% should be layup play for Peyton Thorne and Keandre Lambert-Smith. And Keandre Lambert-Smith made the wrong read, and I think it was him, because him and the DB were running side by side. Peyton Thorne threw a back shoulder, and there's nobody else out there.
Right.
It's turn around, catch the ball, 12-yard gain out of bounds. should have been as easy as it gets, miscommunication. But again, don't put guys – I don't think you have to put guys in that position at that point in time. The last possession, I went back and looked, and sometimes you tip your cap. Oklahoma did a heck of a job.
They really did.
I mean, that third down play, it is wide open when you snap the ball. It's wide open a second after you snap the ball. And then, boom, they retreat right into a passing lane, and it changes everything. I thought they did a great job. But, again, third and four, my kicker struggled. I'm at the 43-yard line. If I don't get 3 yards, I punt it. But if I'm running it and I get 3 yards and I got fourth and one with a chance to end the game, I'm going to keep going. And to me, those are the things that – and Hugh Freeze, he's owned up to it. He said, look, there's some things we got to do better. And that was part of it. You got to execute better. But for 49 and a half minutes, that was as good as an Auburn team has played in a couple of years, opinion.
You're right.
It was Hugh Freeze's best game at Auburn. It was Peyton Thorne's best game at Auburn.
Well, and we talked about it last week. If this team doesn't turn it over, they can play with anyone. And they showed that last weekend. And it's unfortunate, but the one turnover that you can't have, you throw an interception, the guy dives and catches it last week, you still win.
Yeah. I mean,
the one thing you can't happen is return for touchdown.
And where that ball was picked, it wasn't as soon as the ball was picked, it wasn't a pick six. But once he hit the corner, it was.
Correct. And so now is can you take the next step? And I wrote about this week, and we had some players talk about it. Now you got to get over the hump. They have put themselves, I think, in a much better position. Can you get over the hump and start to find a way to win those games? And that's
they really, really need to win a game on the road
that's
in October.
It. Yeah, I mean, you got to win really one. And they're winnable games. Saturday is a winnable game. Now you're going to have to play really well, but it is a winnable game if you go over and play well.
Hugh Freeze's Kentucky
nearly beat them, and then Alabama did.
Hugh Freeze has talked about 9 out of 10 times. I would say 8 or 9 out of 10 times.
I would say 8 out of 10.
8 out of 10.
I don't think. But we hadn't seen him play yet.
We haven't seen him play. And we've seen in college football that the 1 in 10 or 2 in 10 shot can go in.
Kentucky went to Ole Miss and dominated that football game.
Every week I mean, 1 in 10 or 2 in 10 shot goes in. So it's not over.
We haven't seen him play yet. We don't know how good Oklahoma is. I don't think they're terrible. Offensively, they're not very good. Defensively, they're pretty good. And Auburn did some really good things against them offensively. Georgia gave up a ton. Alabama's really good offensively.
Georgia's passing offense against Auburn's pass rush and secondary.
That's the key.
As much as folks want to focus on the quarterback position for Auburn.
It is. Can Auburn get pressure on Carson Beck without having to send 6 or 7? Because if you can't
Georgia,
do that.
Georgia's and I guess can Auburn. Not, they're not running the ball very much this year. Which is
injuries on the offensive line. Yep. Tate Rattledge is out. We'll see about Wilson.
And running back.
We'll see about Wilson at center. I mean, potentially. I mean, you know, they lost him and had to play Drew Bobo last week. But, yes, that is the question because if Carson
Drew
Beck
Bobo
is,
from Auburn High,
yes,
right?
Yes, he came in and played against Alabama last week. If you can't pressure him without having to send a linebacker and a safety – and you have to send 6 guys to get pressure, then it's going to be a long day. This is one of my games where I've talked about interior defensive linemen. It hasn't impacted you yet. This one, Alabama, probably the two that stand out the most. Missouri, maybe a little bit.
Is it in part because those are probably the teams with the most talented interior offensive lines?
And the fact that they have guys who can throw the ball down the field and have such a strong arm that they can challenge you vertically. We saw Oklahoma do it last week a little bit. Brady Cook's more of he can do those things, but you think about the weapons and arm talent from those two teams especially, that's where you start talking about, okay, can you create some pressure from the interior? That's going to be a huge part of this game.
Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover with us here on the Wednesday Drive here in hour number one. Love for you to join in. You can do so by calling the Drive Hotline, which is sponsored by Skybar And the number to get you through is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Come on in and join us. We're just underway here on the Wednesday Drive.
Brady here with Univ.
Part of the Drive. Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Drive here on this Wednesday afternoon, 24 minutes after 4 o'clock. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell here in the studio. Drew at the controls, and we'd love for you to join in if you've got a question or comment for Jason. We look back a little bit at last week, as painful as that one was. Jason, that one, the first two losses were bad. Saturday's was much more painful because you thought you could have won either of the Cal or the Arkansas game. Last week was one where it wasn't could have, it was should have.
Yeah, I thought all three of them were should have.
Yeah, but you led the fourth quarter.
Correct. I mean, like, for different reasons, but this one was you're right there. There's no question in this because you played much better in this game.
You just felt like, well, the thing is, at halftime, I said to Dan, I mean, we left points that we didn't have.
Yeah,
I mean, should have been up much more than 7 points at the half.
Yeah, but I revert back a little bit to. You got 7 points because you went forward on fourth down and a goal and didn't score. Because they went three and out. You got field position, ended up scoring. You ended up getting really 7 points out of that anyway.
Should have gotten some points at the end.
But the field goal, and I honestly, nobody will ever – I mean, and there's no way to ever know it. The play where you don't get out of bounds and you have to run Towns on, I think it impacted him the rest of the game. You run out there and you miss a field goal. The next kick, even though you have plenty of time, was the exact same kick.
Right.
And then the long kick, it's 51 yards, just difficult anyway, but it was kind of a very similar kick again.
I was elbowing Bill saying, I kind of like a punt here during the long field goal attempt towards the end of the game. I just thought the way Oklahoma's offense had played to that point, I was worried about the field position if you miss it. And maybe, you know, down 11, right, that's not something you can be as concerned about.
Yeah.
You know, I understand. I think, honestly, a couple of times in the game, you got the sense that even up 11 with an Oklahoma offense sputtering, Hugh Freeze wanted points. Like, he wanted more even more than he wanted to run clock.
Well,
like that would explain the approach after the Jarquez run.
Well, but it's just the way this thing works. It's just a numbers thing, and unless you go, hey, it doesn't matter, we're going to run the football. You go, hey, all right, the numbers tell you to do this, and that's just the way it works.
I think Hugh Freeze is not one of those, you know, fans have lamented playing not to lose, coaching not to lose.
Oh, say it, Bill.
I don't think Hugh Freeze is a coach that is coaching not to lose. He's not going to – he hasn't been the type to pull back. I think he wants to go ahead and bury teams.
We don't say Tubber Shell. We haven't said it in a long time. No, but I think
you're not going to get that. At least you haven't.
And somebody's like, oh, with the Tubber Shell, you win that game. Yeah, but you might not be in a position to win that game if you play that way all the game, which is what – that's the way those things did. You might not run the football – if you don't throw it. That's the whole point. Like, I think people are like, well, just go be Michigan. Well, this team can't be Michigan. They're not good enough up front to go be Michigan and run it 84 times out of 88 play. You're just not going to do those things.
Something you see often in college basketball are teams that are hardwired to shoot quickly. That suddenly
they really struggle if they get a lead and try to slow it down.
Suddenly have to protect a lead.
Auburn basketball.
Absolutely. Any team that's I'd say when you're up tempo and it's a first or second shot offense,
stall and do that, you rarely do you get off a shot.
Yeah, and
the shot clock goes off and you don't get a shot up.
Taking that thing from fourth,
you're not used to trying to keep the ball.
Yeah,
taking that thing from fourth gear to neutral, right? Like going, you know, suddenly, oh, we're going to play four corners and slow.
But you know, but they did. Hey, they huddled. It wasn't like they were playing fast.
No, you're right.
But I thought there was a time where you have enough points, and that's it is something that you have to figure out. And I still think it's, hey, I honestly don't really trust our defense as much, even though they've played okay. But then, and then you do that, and then they throw a 60-yard pass and score a touchdown, and all of a sudden you go, like, we better go score again. And so it does change the mentality of it a little bit.
I asked off the air, and I don't know. I think we're mostly like I want to hear your thoughts. Like I'm sure you've run into some Auburn fans who think either Auburn has a better chance to win with one of the other quarterbacks than they do with Peyton Thorne, or they simply don't want to see Peyton Thorne anymore. They feel like it's the die is cast, and you know what you're going to get with Thorne, and it's not good enough. What do you say to folks who feel like the quarterback position is a current problem that can be solved by looking elsewhere on the depth chart?
Yeah, I would say that if you ask the players on this team, they would, other than maybe the other quarterbacks, they would 100% tell you that Peyton Thorne's the guy that gives them the best chance to win. I think we saw that last week. Now, you can't turn it over. But I don't know how you go and play another way. We saw a half of Hank Brown against the defense that's not very good. Maybe, but if you do that and you just go, hey, we're just going to live with that, and then you go to the next guy and you go, oh, it's not any better, you're punting on a season. They've played five games.
And something that Hugh Freeze has preached is, you know, improvement. And
if you don't need
to just see, oh, you're getting a lot of yards or you're doing this or that. It needs to be, you need to see some in the win.
What happens if you don't get any yards and it's even worse and you lose 48-3? Then you go, well, what do you do the next time? I mean, like, you have to go, look, whatever we do each week to give ourselves the best chance to win. And I don't think that there's any question that that's Peyton Thorne. Do you have to do things better? Yes. But I don't think right now those other guys are prepared to go do that, and especially now going on the road. And people will ask, like, oh, next year. Well, you worry about next year.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not 1988.
NIL and the transfer portal, it's not
1988.
There are no guararantees for next year.
You don't have to worry about developing a quarterback. If he don't develop here and he's not ready to go, then you go get another guy.
And you're not seeing Hugh Freeze opposed to playing his first and second year players elsewhere.
If he felt like a true freshman gave them the best chance to win, we've seen it. That guy be playing. Not saying Walker White can't be that guy.
To me, the most exciting thing so far about this season for Auburn football, I understand they're 2-3 with three home losses, but I would say, even recognizing the NIL era, the thought that you have some foundational pieces on defense getting their feet wet, not just moving forward this year, but, you know, the possibility, and we'll see who sticks around, right? But between the secondary and Malik and Bobby, Jamison, Travis, by the way, we're going to ask you on the air, Is it okay to call him Bobby?
That's what I do.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah. I think Andy Burcham asked us yesterday because Andy would love to
when he's doing the games whether to call him Quintrell or Bobby.
I mean, everybody that's inside the building calls him Bobby. Then that's good enough.
Okay. Well, I hope Andy's listening. But that's we pledged to ask you about. But between Malik and Bobby on the defensive line, Keldrick Falk as well. These are guys that figure to be at Auburn at least one more season. You saw Riddick. Really impress in his taste. Amaris Williams has also gotten on the field. Kieron Crawford, like there are multiple pieces on this defense that feel like, I mean, it's well, again, we'll see, but there are a lot of pieces that you feel like could be
here's my question. People have talked about is like the 24 of the 49 players that played Saturday are freshmen or sophomores. Of the 25 upperclassmen, as it stands today, who do you feel like is a bona fide, no doubt NFL player? Keandre Lambert-Smith, I don't have any question. I think he's a guy that's going to play in the NFL.
I don't know that there's another player that I would say
bona fide for sure. That's where I am. Now, are there other guys who can be an NFL guy?
Other guys get shots.
Yes.
But you go
bona fide, yeah, that guy's going to be a guy. I think Keandre Lambert-Smith is a guy. That's what you deal with. And you got guys that are better. I think they're better, and they've been solid. But the most talented guys on this roster, are guys that are first and second year guys.
All right, we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Then we'll get to the phones. Brian and Spector, you guys will be up when we come back here on the Wednesday Drive. Welcome back into the drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. Bill, Dan, and Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover. We're getting to the phone. Spector will get to you just momentarily. Let's update you on Major League Baseball, day two of the Wild Card Series. And the Tigers have moved on to the American League Division Series as they eliminate the Astros 5-2. Yesterday it was crazy. The first three ball games all won by the visiting team, and today the Tigers make it 2-0, and the Royals are still shutting out Baltimore. They shut them out 1-0 yesterday. It's 1-0 today in the top of the fourth.
I believe we didn't have a home run in the first three games yesterday. It was Tatis hitting the first home run of the postseason.
He crushed one.
Did he get a hold? No, but that's shocking to think. Three Major League Baseball postseason games.
Pitching has been very good, which, I mean, it's not unusual in the postseason. Thus far, the road teams have had the advantage, with the exception of the Padres.
Tigers feel a little Team of Destiny-ish when you play that well down the stretch,
and
you just start
written off.
And now you're waxing.
Well, and then you have a bona fide number one dude.
Who hasn't pitched yet, right? He pitched yesterday.
But you have a guy like that to go, okay, you feel pretty good about giving yourself a chance to win every time that guy steps on the mound. That's a big deal. But these are only two out of three.
Yes.
Okay.
So they're best of three, so that's why the Tigers are the next
one is three out of five?
Yes.
Okay.
And then sevens for the semis.
And then the two National League games, Mets-Brewers. Mets win yesterday and can move on. And then the Braves trying to stave off elimination tonight in a ball game that will be carried here on ESPN 106.
So the first two games are at one and then one at the other.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sean Manaea going for the Mets tonight against Frankie Montas for the Brewers. Peralta pitched yesterday. And then Braves-Padres. It's Max Fried against Joe Musgrove. An excellent pitching matchup in San Diego. Musgrove, I believe the only Padres no or no the first Cease pitch one this year. The first Padres no hitter ever against Max Fried, Southern California guy, pitching.
Maybe his last start.
It very well
could be his last start for the Braves.
So the Braves got two games at home. And the Padres won?
No, these are in San Diego.
No, the Padres.
Padres were at home.
Yeah, the Padres were the number one wild card.
That's what I was wondering. I was like, okay.
And, Bill, there is no travel in this round. All three games are at the home site.
That's right.
There's no travel. The home team will play. And three games in 3 days with no travel. Mm-hmm. So if the Braves win today, tomorrow.
Probably an afternoon game tomorrow.
Tomorrow night in San Diego for game three.
All right, let's get to the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. 334-321-1390. And Spector gets us started. Hey, Spector.
Hey guys, who we got today? Brian?
No, Jason.
We got information, Jason.
Okay, I get you guys mixed up all the time. Sorry about that. But listen, y'all hear me out first, and I'll let you comment. And I heard some disturbing news today from a radio host today. Of course, it was his opinion that Auburn's quarterback room does not have the quarterback for 2025, and that's really disturbing to me, because we have quarterbacks that are capable of being taught what to do and how to do it and when to do it. And to say that we do not have a quarterback in our room today that may be the starter next year. Now, with that being said, last year, everybody on the radio was saying, oh, well, Peyton didn't have a spring practice. Well, how many actual games can trump a spring practice? And then here we are. I feel like I'm still reliving 2023. We still have the same problems. We put a freshman in there in one game. He does real good. So we got hope there. And then he gets his start in the Arkansas game, and he screws up. Okay, he's a freshman. He's not a fifth-year senior. So now he screwed up. So he obviously now is not going to get another chance. He'll probably be playing in UAB next year. So who does that leave in the quarterback room? We got a freshman that's really highly looked at that's it's not even on the roster as far as playing, which is White. And then when we have another guy that supposedly had the best arm of all the quarterbacks that's not even playing a down. And that's what disturbs me. If this year is lost, we're basically down to 5 wins maybe. So why aren't you putting the young guys out there and getting them ready to play for the following year? You know, you say, well, we got to have a win to impress the recruits. Well, that ship has sailed, son. That ship has sailed. You know, there ain't no recruit going to look in here and see that what we're doing today is not working. I don't know what's going on with the coaches. I don't know what's going on with the offensive line. The defense seems like they're holding their own, but they can only hold their own so long. They can't stay on the field for 60 minutes. But the only way we're going to be able to beat Georgia is to keep the defense off the field. And if our offense can somehow, some way, find a way, which is, I tell you, Auburn is not going to win the Georgia game. I wish they could, but I don't see any way possible with the team that we have now and quarterbacks, the way they're playing. You know, you take away the pick six that Peyton threw. Yeah, we probably would have won that game. We just ran it, throw it out of bounds, kick the ball, put them deep, and run the clock out. But that didn't happen. I mean, the play was called. That's when that fifth-year senior's got to say, I cannot make this pass. I'm just going to heel it out of bounds. Just throw it as far as I can out of bounds. Or I'm going to run it as far as I can get it, and then we'll punt the ball. But that didn't happen. That decision did not come from our quarterback. The decision did not come from the head coach. So, you know, you got to have a 60-40 blame there, 60 being the coach calling the play to begin with, and Peyton not having the ability to see that he cannot make the pass. But anyway, what I'm really disturbed about, Brian, or Jason, is that I heard that we do not have a quarterback in the quarterback room that's going to even be here next year.
Well, how would somebody know that? You can leave them on, but that's fine. I'm like, nobody knows that. You can speculate that all you want to. And here's the other thing. I think they're going to bring they're going to bring in a transfer, but there's going to be guys that have a chance to compete. Nobody's saying that the quarterback for next year is not on the roster.
I wouldn't be stunned if next year's starting quarterback isn't on the roster.
Yeah, though. No, but I'm saying, but I also wouldn't be stunned if one of these guys got better. But the problem is, as we just said, if you ask the guys on this roster, hey, who you feel like gives you the best chance to win, they're going to say Peyton Thorne. They see practice every day. Holden Garner's got a strong arm. That doesn't matter. There's a lot of guys that have strong arms. It doesn't matter. Hank Brown, he struggled against Arkansas, and then they had a meeting. And obviously there were some things that they went, man, he wasn't quite as ready as we thought he was. Does Peyton Thorne have to play better? Absolutely. A lot of guys have to play better. They got to quit turning it over. This the notion of the season's over with, you just played a really good team off their feet. One turnover, you lose a game. People are acting like this is 2012 Auburn football. This team has not been beaten 63 to nothing. I mean, like they have had a chance and maybe should have won all three games. This is not a terrible football team. The record's not very good. But this isn't – people are acting like this, well, it's over with. You ain't going to win another game.
If you had any indication that the players felt that way, were tossing in the towel, then yes. But we haven't seen any indication of that.
And as far as recruiting, I think recruits are going, hey, look, they're really close, and they're playing some young guys because they have to. You know what? I'm the guy that's going to help them get over the hump. Because
awful lot of buzz today about Deuce Knight.
Yeah, I mean, I think Auburn is still right there with one of the top quarterback prospects in the country. And again, if you're looking at it going, I can be the guy that helps them get over the hump. That's what you want. You want to recruit guys like that instead of recruiting guys going, They're not very good. Well, you know what? I'll make them better if I go there. That's the guy you want.
I think anyone who wants to say with authority what's going to happen,
you have no idea.
I would hope you have really intimate knowledge of like the NIL picture, because it feels like that's part of it.
I got tagged in a post yesterday by one of our national guys, and who used to cover Notre Dame. And I got a flood of Notre Dame fans who then immediately started talking about disbanding guys. I'm like, well, you have no idea what this is about. So Notre Dame, like, well, you got Riley Leonard. Now, I know he wanted to go to Notre Dame, and that was part of it. Do you think he went for free? I don't.
No fan believes their program.
No, it's always somebody else.
Guys, people go to Notre Dame for the right reasons.
Yeah, and go to everywhere else for the wrong.
And everywhere else for the wrong.
I have a newfound respect for lots of other programs after dealing with them. I muted the conversation. I'm like, I'm done, because we're the greatest. And they're like, well, what's that program done? I really wanted to respond. When's the last time you won a national championship? 1988, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, all right. Then that nothing else needs to be said. But getting back to the original thought.
It's remarkably similar to the conversation, you know, I just asked you sort of the question about, like, the arguments that people make for playing a different quarterback other than Peyton Thorne right now.
It's easy sitting in your rocking chair to go, well, we're punt on the season and play a young guy and get him ready. Well, tell that to the guys in the locker room. You've worked all summer and you go five games and you go, well, we're done. We're going to move on. You want to see guys leave? You want to have these guys next year if you do that. You want to talk about a roster? It won't be here next year. If you punt on a season after five games, then these people are talking about, well, you'll start seeing a flood of guys going, well, I'm going to the transfer portal, because they want to win and they want to play the guy that gives them the best chance to win.
I would also point out, and I know we got to take a break, but I would also point out Alabama, after Bryce Young had his final season, Alabama went to the portal, and they said, we're going to bring in that lacrosse player from Notre Dame, and he's going to compete to be the starter with a big-time freshman.
And most people thought he would be the starter because his offensive coordinator was there.
We've got last year's backup, we've got an incoming freshman, and we've got the guy from the portal
Correct.
Who was impressive that we brought in. And in the spring they competed, and in the fall they competed, and it was last year's backup. Yep. Won the job, and now he's Jalen Milroe.
Who didn't play any the year before.
Played one game, I think, when Bryce got hurt.
But you just don't know. You don't know how guys mature, how they respond, how Hank Brown will be the next time he gets that opportunity. You don't know what Walker White, Holden Garner, you don't know, because it hasn't happened yet. What we do know, I mean, Auburn's going to go get an experienced guy to go compete at that position. They're going to go bring in a freshman.
A high school guy.
And then you're going to have this group and to go, hey, roll the balls out there and may the best man win.
Appreciate the call, Spectre. We need to get to our final break of hour number one, final few minutes with Jason Caldwell. So stick with us here on the Wednesday Drive.
Experience enough. Live with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Got just a few minutes left here in hour number one, and with Jason Caldwell. And Jason, we'll get a chance to spend a little time with Butch on Friday.
Yeah.
And I had the Sandersons were asking me this morning how things are going. I haven't had a chance to get over there. Just your thoughts on what's going on with
baseball. I stopped by today. First of all, there's a ton of construction still going on. If folks that don't know, they're renovating the entire locker room. So if you're familiar with the old locker room, there was a big staging area where they had like a pool table and things. They've come all the way out, so the locker room is going to be extended out. The coaching offices are going to move to the second floor where currently the Health South, where Doc Goodlett's offices, they're going to eventually move up there. But they've got to renovate their space in the old athletics complex first before they can then move, and then they have to renovate that place upstairs. So the coaches are going to be in the Hall of Fame Club for a little bit. Eventually, maybe move across the street to Jordan-Hare Stadium after football season to have office space until theirs is done. So there's a lot of things going on. The baseball team's currently dressing in the old football locker room at the complex. The thing right now is just there's a lot of guys. I mean, there's a ton of competition. You can see the impacts already of not only NIL, but what we think is going to happen in the future with the full scholarship numbers and how it's going to go. And it still feels like it's trending towards, hey, SEC, Big Ten, AC, we're going 34. Y'all come with us if you want to, which will be tremendous. But the thing I look at, I talked to Butch today for a little while, but from a pitching standpoint, arms, talent, you brought in some transfers. Now you start to get a see for what it's going to look like when you start playing games. And so I don't know that I remember a year, though, where you go, yeah, you normally feel pretty good about this guy being a starter. It is wide open. Wide open from a pitching standpoint, any role, any place. And so I think it's actually a pretty neat spot to be in because you go like, hey, it's fresh.
Yeah.
We don't have any preconceived notions. A lot of guys to watch, a lot of transfers. And then position player-wise, some newcomers. Eric Snow's been really good. Bub Terrell from Thompson is Jason Hayward-looking guy.
Wow.
I mean, he's 6'5", 220 outfielder, lefty, hit two home runs last week. So you look at Chase Frelick, true freshman, 6'4", 225, could potentially play third base. I mean, there's some big body guys, so lots of things to look forward to.
Lots of things going on at Auburn Undercover. I mean, Auburn, Georgia football, you talking about other sports, recruiting.
Keeping
though.
An eye on recruiting, yeah, to see what happens. The Deuce Night Watch continues, so we'll pay attention there. Lots of stuff going on, you're right. So look forward to us, auburnundercover.com, ITAT Jason.
The sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Wednesday Drive. Hope everybody doing well on this nice-looking Wednesday. Hope you had a chance to catch hour number one when Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover was here and had, as usual, great information for us. As man, it is a busy time. Basketball practice is going on. Baseball working out. We mentioned I got him to talk a little bit about baseball because I'd had a couple people ask about that specifically. Obviously, football, the resumption of the South's oldest series this Saturday over in Athens, 2:45 Central kickoff between the Tigers and the Bulldogs. Auburn about a 24-point underdog. Jason actually feels pretty good. Feels like Auburn's going to play. Pretty well. If they, you know, they just have to minimize mistakes. Georgia's an extremely talented team, but it's a different kind of Georgia team, Dan. This Georgia team, they are relying on Carson Beck and the passing game, and you saw in the second half last week against Alabama, they can put up the yards and the points, but their defense. Gave up some big plays last week, especially through the passing game.
Yeah, Georgia's offense, especially their run game, really struggled to find its footing against Kentucky in the game in Lexington that went down to the wire. Georgia ran for 102 yards on 30 attempts in that one. Most of that ETN, but still, I think folks expected more out of a Georgia offensive line that brought back what they brought back,
right.
And then to add ETN to that mix, you know, and I know Georgia had to go off script with the rushing game when they found themselves down 28-0 against Alabama.
What team, I mean, who would ever think that you'd see Kirby Smart going for 8 fourth downs? And they converted all 8.
Who'd have thought there'd be very many Kirby Smart teams with a quarterback throwing 50 times?
No kidding.
I mean, Carson Beck was 27 of 50 against Alabama. Usually the Georgia defense can contain the game to the point where a Georgia quarterback can win with half that many attempts in a football game. But to see Carson Beck throwing for 439 yards and three touchdowns in a loss. I mean, that's a.
Turned the ball over. He also
They also threw three picks.
Well, he turned it over four then.
To me, the struggle. Yeah, three interceptions.
And a fumble.
To me, the struggles against Kentucky running the football would be more alarming.
Oh, yes.
Than the Alabama ones, because when you're down 28-0 running
the
football,
you're generally not going to be running the ball anyway.
Stops being the primary focus. Although, you know, I would, you know, I would think what Jason was saying in the first hour that. This is a game where I think Georgia is going to test Auburn's interior defensive line and see if they can stop those up the middle runs, because if you can't, you're in huge trouble. And Auburn's probably going to need their corners and their you know, those young defensive backs are going to have to grow up fast. Jay Crawford playing every snap.
Got his first start and played every single snap.
Every snap at corner with Champ Anthony presumably out for the season.
Antonio Kite didn't play.
Antonio Kite and J.C. Hart both being de-emphasized, I think, in favor of Jay Crawford.
J.C. played some Saturday, but Antonio did not even get on the field.
I think combined they played
it wasn't many.
Yeah, small number of snaps, all of them from J.C. Mm-hmm. And Keontae being moved more inside.
Right.
It's a huge game for, you know, Auburn would love to be able to trust their defensive backs and ask the you know, the rest of the defense to sort of hold their own against that Georgia run game, but it's going to be. It's a big play offense. You know, you got to be. We were talking about it. We were previewing last year's game. Like it's an offense where, I mean, you have to do everything so well to keep them from getting first downs and from getting points. And the more you can, you know, the longer Auburn has a shot. I think this feels like a lot of games where we're breaking down, like, how does an underdog pull off the upset? Mm-hmm. And it feels like Auburn's going to need a quick start and probably a slow start from Georgia, and they're going to need to hang on.
And the fewer mistakes, I'm talking not just turnovers, penalties, I mean, the fewer the mistakes, the better their chance. I mean, when you're a solid underdog the way the Tigers are, you know, you can't ever expect perfection, but Auburn needs pretty darn close.
Yeah, I think Auburn needs to find themselves in a familiar position in some of these other games where they've gotten close to pulling off an upset. They need the lead, and then they need to do something they haven't been able to do in some of these games and actually close it out and hold off the opponent. I mean, it would be not just in the Georgia game, but in any of these games, I think for Auburn to win a game that comes down to the wire against a team with, you know, a team like a Georgia or a Missouri, like it would be massive because of the psychological damage that these losses may have inflicted. Like if you don't want to have the lead late and think, here we go again, let's figure out how this team is going to blow it this time. And if Auburn, once Auburn, it's a little bit like a closer who's blowing saves, right, Bill? Like it's similar to, like, mm-hmm.
You're right.
Boy, and anything that goes wrong is magnified if he's blown a couple of saves, right? A walk suddenly feels like, which is why, like, when Oklahoma hits that 60-yard pass, you're thinking, oh, the closer just walked a batter. Uh-huh. Like, oh, the closer who's been shaky for the last couple of weeks. just didn't get strike three and walked a guy and it's going to lead to another blown save, and it did, and it's like you need to, boy, you desperately close one of these out. And, you know, Georgia's going to be a tall task because they're a multiple touchdown favorite for a reason and they're at home, but in one of these October games, it would be tremendously impactful for, I think, for the locker room and for a lot of the fans, you know, welcoming the team back in November.
Oh yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, I was looking at the SEC stats, and this one is crazy. Georgia is 15th in the SEC in rushing. Oklahoma is number 16. I mean, Auburn's around the middle of the pack with the fifth best yards per carry. That just tells you Auburn doesn't run it as much. As a matter of fact, Auburn has Auburn is 12th or 13th in the SEC in rushing attempts.
Kentucky was 45 for 170 on the ground, nearly 4 yards a carry on the ground against Georgia in Athens.
Maybe Kentucky's a little better than we thought after that South Carolina game.
Probably.
They went in and really controlled the ball game against Ole Miss. That's how crazy this league has been. I still don't know how good some teams are or how bad some teams that you might have thought aren't very good are. I think we're going to find out. We'll find out a little bit more. Ole Miss, South Carolina is going to be interesting Saturday. That's in Columbia. A lot of people don't really know what to think of Missouri because they haven't been overly impressive in their wins. They've won, and they've been at home, and Auburn will have to go there after the trip to Athens. But, Auburn's got to play very well. I agree with you. They have to get off to a quick start. They need to do something to try to calm the crowd there. It's homecoming in Athens. How many times has Auburn been a team's homecoming opponent? I would say not many, or at least not for a while. So,
Kirby was asked about that at Media Days and sort of punted.
And he said he didn't have any.
Yeah, he punted it to the administration and said he's focused on other matters in the football program, and he doesn't decide which of the games is
Auburn's
the
somebody else's homecoming
is the homecoming game
this year too. It may be Missouri. Auburn may be Missouri's homecoming opponent. All right, 334-321-1390. Love for you to join in. That is the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
Hour number two of the Drive, brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. Let's get to the Drive Hotline before we get to our first break. And Matt is up first. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, guys. First of all, I'm not going to rehash. I've listened to you guys some of this week, and Jay Crane I thought was great yesterday, talking about not a good roster and be stupid on what you do and play calls. I thought all that was very accurate. Injuries are a worry with our depth and so forth. Do you guys know if we're going to have our old kicker back, or are we going to be sticking with the same freshman kid?
That's a good question. Yesterday there was a brief viewing window. We didn't get a chance to be over there, but a couple of people that were there watching said that Alex McPherson looked better kicking the ball yesterday than he did in warm-ups on Saturday. On Saturday, he was accurate, but didn't look like he had much more leg strength than about a 40-yard field goal. But apparently he was kicking solidly from 45-plus yesterday. So I wouldn't be shocked to see Alex back.
Seems like we would need – nothing against the – what's his name? Drawing a blank on the kid
Towns Magoo.
But obviously he wasn't expected to take this kind of role, and we got to be able to hit – 35 and in. And so if it means using a kicker that I don't know if they're trying to keep some eligibility for the other guy or not.
No, I think Max already redshirted, right? He redshirted during his first year on campus.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he was behind.
Okay,
yeah,
so it won't matter one way, Anders. I guess, either way. But
yeah, he was here with Carlson, Carlson's last year, Anders, and he was redshirting that season. So I think it would just be more about making sure he's getting his strength back and he's up to 100%. And I don't know the timetable on when they will decide that he, at least for field goals, I would expect Towns to probably keep the kickoff job.
Yeah, he's been excellent
kicking off the rest of the season, but I think it's a matter of when they feel like Evan or when they feel like Alex, Evan's the brother, gives them the best chance to win, the best chance to make some of those field goals that the Towns missed this week.
And the other point I'll make as far as, I think the quarterback played pretty well. Obviously made a couple of bad decisions, but I think our quarterback's just going to have to be able to run. So I think he does give us our best choice on that, best option, even if, we have to limit maybe his play calling or changing the play at least at some point, maybe make it dumb it down a little bit, and especially into the game situation. Have we pretty much, as a team, decided who's going to be redshirting and who's not? I mean, we're playing all the freshmen that we're planning on playing, and a lot of them are playing, but I assume there are a few that we're holding back and and aren't going to be a part moving forward because we're four games in.
Yeah, there are only a couple of freshmen that haven't been on the field yet. Walker White has not played.
Has Joe Phillips played?
Yes.
Joe Phillips played some. I was thinking maybe
secondary? A lot of guys could still qualify and could still redshirt. I'd say that more than half of the guys have played, and more than half of the freshmen have played in all four games, or played in at least four games. You probably got around 10 or so that have played in five, so they can't redshirt. There are a few, I mean, guys like Drake Carter, the big offensive lineman.
Bryce Kane?
Bryce Kane has not played in a game or two, so he could still redshirt. I wouldn't be surprised to see somebody like him. I would think offensive lineman. Walker's probably going to redshirt. But the other guys, there's a chance of playing, and Hugh Freeze has said, hey, things aren't the same the way they used to be. You can't just assume that you're going to redshirt this guy and have him for the next 4 years. Heck, you may not have him next year. So if a guy can help you at any time and you feel like they can help you win a ball game, you're going to play him.
Yeah. How about the wide receiver? Is it Perry Thompson?
Perry Thompson. Perry's played. He hasn't played a lot in most of the games, but he's appeared, I believe, in all five games.
It seems like he could be someone we need to get involved.
Well, Hugh mentioned him at the press conference on Monday. He said Perry had a really good week of practice, and we need to get him involved more in the game.
Right. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate the call, Matt. All right, we'll get to our first break. Don't forget Tiger Takes coming up at the bottom of the hour.
I would think part of the thing complicating getting Perry Thompson on the field is how well Lambert Smith is playing.
Yeah, he's been working at the same position as Keandre.
Yeah, and that's not an impasse necessarily. You can find ways to divvy up the snaps, but with Cam, Keandre, and Perry all primarily as outside guys, you know, you can really only have you. I think ideally you'd want two of them on the field at the same time, unless you want to move one of them inside. But it does feel like if you asked me to pick a true freshman on offense who is going to see more snaps in the second half than he did in the first half, I would think Perry Thompson is a pretty good. Malcolm's already seeing his verse there.
He really is,
and I don't think that's going to change anytime soon.
And he's a guy that's working inside.
I mean,
that helps him a little bit.
There were multiple times, you know, again, another piece of silver lining for you, like there were multiple times when Auburn made plays against Oklahoma, and you did not have a receiver who could do that last year, like the Malcolm Simmons touchdown. I don't know if there was a time last season when Auburn had a receiver get behind a defensive back like that in SEC play and run away from the defense. Cam Coleman, you know, dunking on that, you know, turning around and going up and getting that
right.
Going at, like that. Auburn did not have players who can do that, and the ones they have this year that can do that, with the exception of Lambert Smith, the guys that have been really flashing at that position are guys in their first year on the field.
All right, we'll get to that first break of hour number two. Stick with us here on the Wednesday Drive.
Big Eat and Peck on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 106.7.
Thanks, you. We're back here on the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls. Love for you to join in. Don't forget, a reminder, Tiger Takes with Eugene Asante coming up at the bottom of the hour as Jacob Goins was able to spend some time with Eugene. We'll have that for you in a little while. In the meantime, phone lines are open, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast. Don't forget, you can catch Auburn, Georgia on Wings 94.3 this Saturday. We've got the Auburn Sports Network, the crew going on the road and calling this one from, I believe, the new press box in Athens, Georgia.
Yeah, that's what Andy was telling us yesterday. I was just telling Dan a couple of days ago when I decided that I wasn't going and we're transferring the credentials over to Dan, that, man, really nice press box there in Athens, and it's great to be there on the sideline and watching, and Andy saying yesterday, nope, it's in the corner now. So at least it's not in the end zone. But, I mean, still. I think you'll enjoy the. We'll see. You can let me know if they have changed. They used to have a really good menu there in the press box.
I've never been to Sanford Stadium as credentialed media. I have gone once as a fan. I went to the blackout in 07. I knew I was going to town that weekend. And I thought, all right, well, you know, if a ticket opens up or something, and by chance, you know, I was able to get into the stadium that day and saw a memorable game from Auburn and Georgia in the series. That was the beginning of Georgia's current winning streak at home. Yeah. In this series, Auburn won.
That is right. Auburn had won the last time there in 2005.
Auburn had won in 2005 on a remarkable fourth quarter comeback and a fourth down conversion from Brandon Cox and Devin Romeshadu. Since then, coming up on the 20-year anniversary, if Auburn doesn't win this one, it will be 20-plus years since Auburn's last victory in Athens before they can snap the streak. Auburn not going – actually, we don't know, Bill. We don't know the next time Auburn goes to Athens.
No, you're right, because the SEC schedule is only set through next year.
We don't know, and we have reason to believe.
I fully believe that Auburn and Georgia will continue to play each year.
We have reason to believe if the conference keeps an 8-game schedule in 2026, Auburn and Georgia will not play. If the conference keeps,
but I don't believe that that's going to be the case.
No, but that statement is true. If the conference keeps an 8-game schedule, then Auburn Georgia probably won't play in 2026 because you need to play the other 8 teams. You need to play the teams that aren't on your schedule this year. You would keep Bama as your one permanent opponent. I think the other 7 teams teams.
It would need to be a 1-7.
And I think a 1-7 would not leave room for Auburn Georgia year. I think Georgia would probably draw Florida as their yearly permanent opponent, and I would imagine that Auburn would draw Alabama in that situation. So we don't know the next time that Auburn and Georgia will play in Athens because schedules are only set through 2025, and something significant would need to change. The conference would need to add a 9th game to league play for the Auburn-Georgia series to resume in 2026 with a game in Athens. Now, people think that's going to happen, but it hasn't happened yet, and I think we're coming up on. I don't know when you would need to make the announcement official that you're adding a 9th conference game in 2026. The 2024 season is ending in the next couple of months. Probably that would need to happen in the next 6-9 months for that to happen. But without it, there is a question of the future of this series after 2025. So it could be a long time before Auburn plays again. In Athens, or a longer than usual time before Auburn plays again in Athens and has a chance to snap the streak that started in 2005.
334-321-1390. That's the drive hotline. And is it John that we've got up next? Hey, John.
Hey, guys. I just caught the end of that conversation. If that's true, that means Alabama-Tennessee would also be on the shelf.
That is correct. And that's why I'm saying they're going to be playing.
I think Alabama-LSU would be on the shelf in that situation.
Alabama-Tennessee, yes, would definitely fall.
I can't see any way they would do that. But two quick points. I expect Auburn to play well in Athens on Saturday. I'm going to be honest. I've been looking ahead towards basketball travel. Quick question. You guys know when the SEC actually announces any of the game times for the SEC basketball, or is that more, or they do it like the SEC football and it's, basically, they decide the week of the game.
I have a bad feeling. So this is the first year, John, that we've got the ESPN, you know, in full control. And ESPN aired most of the basketball games previously. You had the SEC, you had the CBS game on Saturday, but for the most part, it was an ESPN deal. I believe they've got more flexibility than ever as far as game times when league play gets going. I mean, there are flex games during the week, right? Like there are games that could move from Tuesday to Wednesday. I believe still on the schedule this year because they're going to be able to. I would think maybe 2 weeks out they'll be able to mix and match for the best TV matchups based on who's playing well and who's disappointing and who's overachieving and things like that. So I think it could be a while before we have concrete information about, especially once we, you know, as far as like when games in January and February are going to take place. I think Auburn could be. Auburn will have more freedom with non-conference games in November and December, but the league games in January and February it could go up to the wire before you find out when and where those games are.
Thanks for that insight. I totally forgotten that ESPN took over basketball coverage, too. It wasn't just limited to football. So appreciate it, guys. Y'all have a good day.
Appreciate the call, John. 334-321-1390. All right, so I was just trying to do some figuring. I had not really thought about this. So, yes, Auburn hasn't won at Athens since 2005. I was thinking about this. I'd never really kept up with it that much. I've been to 26 Auburn-Georgia games in Athens.
You've been?
In Athens.
Okay.
And until you went to that game in 2005, I was doing pretty well. Because Auburn, how many is that Auburn has lost in a row in Athens? That would be 1, 2, 3.
When did it switch to?
In 2012.
So
Auburn played.
Seven,
Auburn
nine.
Played at Auburn in 12 and 13. So 7, 9, 11. And then 14, 16, 18, 20, 22. So seven straight. Yeah, so Auburn, I'm 11 and 15.
There you go.
In Athens.
And you were,
I was 11 and 8.
You were 11 and 8 when they started doing the Soldier Boy.
Yeah, that's right.
When they broke out the Soldier Boy dance and the black uniforms in 2007. Mm-hmm. Younger fans may not know that story. So that was like always a big rumored thing with Georgia, was they were going to wear black uniforms. They have not worn them in a long time. There was always like the rumor they were going to do it that season, and I guess the Auburn game had been circled as a potential time to do it. They warm up in their traditional red uniforms, go into the locker room, change into black uniforms, and wear those when they take the field. And then in the fourth quarter, I believe that the third and fourth quarter, not unlike the swag surf.
It was like 20-17 Auburn. Auburn had a lead 20-17. The game winds up 45-20 Georgia. And yeah,
So between the third and fourth quarters, not unlike the Auburn swag surf, Georgia had they played the Crank That by Soldier Boy, which was a popular song. I feel like Grandpa Simpson telling the story. Like, it was a popular song at the time. it was on the radio all the time. It's like they played that and Uga, right, was doing the dance and just leading. The crowd was in a frenzy. And it was one of those
not the real dog, the mascot.
Yeah, no, that would have been something if had they taught the bulldog to
that was the end of Uga, whatever. Yeah,
it was something. And the crowd was in. I mean, it's one of the more remarkable scenes I can remember. And I haven't been to that many road games, but I've been to a lot of the best places in the conference to see road games. One of the more remarkable scenes.
I wonder ever. You know, I never thought about this, but I wonder how Larry Munson described that.
I mean, remember Auburn,
that probably would have been
Auburn fans. Priceless. Auburn fans for years were furious at Vern. Right? That was one of the things where, because the CBS announcers were having a good time dancing along, and I guess. Would that have been Nestler or Gary and that have been Nestler and Vern? I want to say probably then. And I guess they had they were doing that. I guess Vern was doing the dance, and folks interpreted that as some bias or whatever. But no, that was the start of a memorable story. Hey Bill, let me ask you, because
Georgia domination,
really. as someone who's been to that, how many Auburn Georgia games in Athens? What was the number again?
I believe 26.
Okay, so you've been to 26. There are those who believe
that 70s, 80s, 90s, zeros, tens, and
I know Justin Lee from the OA News has written about this before, and there are other Auburn fans who agree with him. There are those who believe that if the conference decides to stick to their guns and play an 8-game conference slate in 2026, and the Auburn-Georgia game is not scheduled as one of your 8 SEC games, Auburn should take measures to schedule Georgia with one of their four non-conference slots in that situation.
So Georgia will never do that as long as they're still playing Georgia Tech.
Georgia would not. You don't. Okay. So no. So your stance.
I mean, it sounds good.
I was going to say. Well, how would you
I
feel
like
from
that.
The?
I mean, Alabama did that with Ole Miss.
And we have we've had recently Wake Forest and North Carolina did that because they didn't like how long it had been between.
Right.
Like they weren't scheduled to play each other in the ACC for a long time, so they scheduled each other as a non-conference game. Kansas State and Arizona played this season in what was officially a non-conference game, even though they're both in the Big 12 now because it was scheduled before Arizona joined the Big 12.
As long as they feel like they own Auburn.
Would you be okay with Auburn pursuing that sort of thing? I know I've seen people who are adamant, like, if that's the way it is, just you know, let the rivalry end and get some new game.
I am confident that the Southeastern Conference will move to 9 games.
Well,
that will alleviate that.
But I want to be able to take to Justin Lee that you would be if you I can chalk you in on board with the idea of let's pursue a non-conference game with Georgia if that thing's not on the 8 game on the 8 game schedule.
Yep. Hey, we need to get to our bottom of the hour break because Tiger Takes is coming up. That'll be on the other side, so stick with us here on the Wednesday Drive.
90 toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Drive here on this Wednesday afternoon, and it's time now for Tiger Takes, brought to you by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. Visit them today at 217 North College Street or book online at 12ksalon.net.
Jacob Goins with you on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Sitting down talking with our weekly segment, it's Eugene Asante, Auburn football linebacker for Tiger Takes here on ESPN 106.7. It's brought to you by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. Make your next appointment at 12ksalon.net. Eugene, great to have you back on ESPN. I know it's been a tough stretch here, and it was a tough game on Saturday. Kind of walk us through what went down there in the final few moments and a tough loss against Oklahoma.
Yeah, it was, you know, going against Oklahoma, who's new to the SEC, it was a great challenge to go against them. We understand what type of team they were in terms of offensively, defensively, special teams-wise. I feel like the team did a good job in terms of understanding our opponent and trying to dive deep into what they did effectively. You know, and it really comes down to us as a team executing in those big moments and focusing in, locking into a different zone, especially in those critical situations, defensively, offensively, and special teams-wise. I think we have to continue to try to hone in on that, and it's on the leaders of the team to try to push that agenda and tell the guys to lock into those key moments. You know, that seems to be currently our kryptonite, and that's what we need to continue to improve upon.
Coach Freeze talked about earlier this week about the game plan. He says he was really impressed with the game plan and liked the defensive strategy and liked what you guys had going into the game for the Oklahoma offense. Do you feel you guys had a good game plan and for the most part executed it pretty well?
Yeah, so from the defensive perspective, I think we had a great game plan. Understanding what Hawkins brought to the table, who's a dynamic quarterback, does a lot of great things in the passing game and with his legs. I think we had a great game plan in terms of trying to get vision on him, not allow him to escape through the rush lanes. And he had the early one early on, but we were able to adjust on the sidelines and get things corrected. And I think the biggest thing was just honing in on the details of our preparation throughout the week and then getting those in-game adjustments to where we can continue to try to contain him and neutralize the things that he was good at. And I think the biggest thing is just, you know, playing a complete game, what I've seen on tape. I've watched the tape several times over and over. It's just playing a complete game, understanding that we're up 11. And, you know, at that point in time, they need to create some type of offense, get big plays going, and hit us with a vertical shot. And, you know, the biggest thing is just trying to hone in those key moments and execute ultimately.
A lot of guys got in defensively on Saturday. You were flying around. A lot of young guys got some action, too, and making big-time plays, whether it's Falk off the edge or a lot of you in the linebacker room. Are you liking what you're seeing effort-wise from the guys defensively with everybody getting in 5 weeks in so far?
I think so. I like the effort that the defense displayed. I like seeing young guys go out there. DeMarcus Riddick, who's flying around, I'm so proud of how he performed and going out there and being a true freshman and having the responsibility of being a spy in certain situations. I think he did an absolutely phenomenal job in that regard. And Jay Crawford on the island as a true freshman corner, not shy or afraid of the moment, understanding his role and trying his best to neutralize their receiver on that side of the field. Caleb Harris stepped in into our dime package and was able to lock down their tight ends, something that he does consistently. And He's a great player in that regard, and just being physical in the run game, and you know, just seeing different guys and different their different roles. It's been an impressive thing to see. It's just I'm so excited to continue to see them blossom, and we need those guys down the stretch.
Through the first five games, 2-3 overall record, all games have been at home. You guys now head on the road for the first time as a leader on this defense and on the team as a whole. What's the message for you guys? Had to keep your attitude up, to keep the positivity going, and to go into what's going to be a really tough October?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is to understand what we can do. In my opinion, I'm just going to be truthful when I say this, I think Auburn has beaten Auburn three times this year. I know the losses on the schedule say to California, Arkansas, and Oklahoma, but I do truly believe that Auburn has beaten Auburn three times this year. We cannot allow us to beat ourselves in these games going further. We have to lock in terms of our mental execution. We have to play more sound football, and we have to be disciplined, and that comes in day-to-day life and preparation. I feel like how you do everything is how you do anything, so just trying to lock in with the details and in our daily lives and apply it to the football field, and the rest will handle itself. If you're able to lock in those key moments and just be detailed with your work, and that's quite frankly something I had to do as a leader and look within myself. It's a constant continuous improvement in this game. So, like, locking in those key moments and ultimately going out there and playing a violent and giving full effort in everything we do against Georgia.
Auburn football linebacker Eugene Asante joining us on ESPN 106.7 for Tiger Takes. We now flip the page to Georgia this week. It is the first road trip of the season, and I know the schedule stacked up so weird, right? Five straight home games, then you're gone the entire month of October, back in November. I mean, that's got to be weird to adjust. You know it going in, but now you do go on the road for the first time in October. I mean, that's got to be weird to adjust to a little bit, huh?
Yeah, certainly is. You know, getting our feet wet in an away game after playing five games at home is certainly something we have to get adjusted to. Offensively, they'll have to get adjusted to having crowd noise and,
sure,
you know, stadium pulse is what they call it in the video game. So just getting adjusted to that is certainly something that they'll have to get accustomed to. Defensively, we understand it'll be a little quieter for us. Communication piece will be a lot more effective. And the biggest thing is just going out there, flying around, having fun on that side. And same thing with offense, just getting back to the basics and just having fun playing the game. This is a child's game. We do have to treat it as such. But then understanding it's a job in terms of locking in and handling your 111, doing your job. So just bringing positive energy to the field and just enjoying what you do.
Well, I know that you're just coming off the Oklahoma game, but now you do get ready for Georgia. Different style quarterback, different style offense, a team that we're very familiar with here at Auburn, and you are as well. But what do you know so far about this Georgia team and their threats that they have on offense?
Yeah, I had the pleasure to talk to Carson on a couple occasions, just picking his mind, picking his brains in terms of things with leadership, of faith. He's certainly somebody that's in the faith and cares about it. He's a dynamic quarterback, one of the best quarterbacks in the country. And the biggest thing for him is just trying to neutralize what he's good at. The corners, being aggressive and tight in coverage, being able to get him off the spot, fluster him in the pocket, and make him come up with some errant throws is, I think, the biggest thing that will help us. And that's a key to victory for us defensively. I understand that they have dynamic running backs in terms of Etienne. Etienne is a great running back for them. Certainly somebody that's a balanced type back, has the power and speed. And the biggest thing for me is just trying to neutralize him, hit him in the backfield, cause disruption, cause TFLs, cause strips, strip attempts, fumbles. Just getting the ball back to the offense as many times as possible. And we understand what their receivers are. They have dynamic receivers. So it's a big challenge for our corners to go against them and get hands on and be aggressive at the line of scrimmage with them when they're in press situations, and being good in zone coverage. So those are all big things defensively that are keys to success for us, and that's what we're going to hone in on.
For you personally, I feel like you played one of your best games Saturday against Oklahoma. I feel like you were just in all the plays and you were in the right spots and making big tackles. I mean, do you feel that way for yourself, that you played one of your better games, or things to still work on?
Yeah, I think certainly for this season, it was one of my better games. I think I cut it loose a little bit more. You know, as a player, sometimes you're so focused in on the details that the coach gives you, sure. and you want to be correct in all those areas and aspects of the game. But for me, I feel like I need to just continue to try to cut it loose, you know, just have fun out there. When I see a tendency or see something that the offense may display, just trusting my instinct and my speed and going out there and playing and diagnosing the play and hitting it. And I had one of those plays in the third quarter. So just playing that game that way, being consistent in terms of how I diagnose plays and trusting my ability. And I know Coach Durkin and this staff was going to continue to try to help me and help me perfect that and just go out there and play the game and be a football player.
Did you get a chance to watch any of the Alabama-Georgia game Saturday night? Oh, yeah. And the craziness of that was Georgia, of course, now coming off a tough loss. But what a wild atmosphere that was.
Yeah, they said that's game of the year. A lot of people were saying that's game of the year. Just seeing them rally, speaking about Georgia here, rally from, I don't know the deficit at that at the point, but it's just an impressive thing to see, you know, guys that are able to go out there and rally from such a deep deficit. So we understand what they are offensively. We understand what they are as a team. And it's a great challenge for us, you know, going against them. And quite frankly, I embrace it. You know, going against an elite, a team, people have said they are the gold standard of college football. And as a player, you know, all you can do is embrace that challenge to go out there and put your best foot forward and make things happen for your team.
In terms of Georgia as a whole on the road, one of the better teams in college football, again, you guys are trying to rally around each other right now and get back into the win column. Is there any concern for some of these younger guys, first road game of the year, Georgia atmosphere, another tough loss, anything like that? Any concern for you guys on this team in terms of what you're going to be able to put on the field Saturday?
I think not necessarily concerns. I would say that it's just getting adjusted to the road environment. You know, I remember my first game, college atmosphere, it was South Carolina versus North Carolina. It was at the Panther Stadium. And I remember that atmosphere of just being in the Panther Stadium and looking around and seeing all different types of people in the environment, South Carolina fans, North Carolina fans. So just getting accustomed to the road environment was certainly something that I think was a tough thing for me as a freshman. So that's the biggest thing. I'm just going to tell them to hone in on your keys and hone in on everything we've done in the off season, and to lean on that and to not let the moment get too big for you. You're prepared and you're ready for this moment.
Auburn on the road at Georgia this Saturday. Eugene Asante joining us on ESPN. One more before we let you get out of here. Keys to victory for you guys. Defensively, of course, but just as a whole for you guys to go on the road, get a huge win, upset victory at a top team like Georgia. Keys to victory for you guys on Saturday.
Yeah, I think number one key to victory, first from the defensive perspective, I think we have to do a good job in making contested throws and throwing the ball into tight windows for Carson Beck. We understand what he is as a quarterback, dynamic in terms of getting the ball to his playmakers. Another key to victory, I feel like, is winning the turnover battle in terms of getting the ball back to the offense as many times as possible, strip attempts and all the different types of avenues to get the ball back, interceptions. Offensively, I think a key to victory is being able to establish the run game. Jarquez is a dynamic running back, certainly somebody that is a workhorse, embraces the challenge of getting 15 carries, embraces the challenge of getting 25 carries, 20 carries, and we gotta lean on him. Then ultimately, being able to throw the ball off of that, you know, the offense is keying in on Jarquez and opening up the pass game and getting into our playmakers like KLS, Malcolm Simmons, and different dynamic playmakers in that room. I think that's the key to the victory, and that's what we're going to continue to try to emphasize in practice.
Auburn on the road at Georgia Saturday. Auburn football linebacker Eugene Asante. He joins us every week on ESPN 106.7 for Tiger Tanks. It's brought to you by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. Make your next appointment online at 12ksalon.net. Eugene, thanks for your time, and as always, War Eagle.
Thank you so much. War Eagle.
And we will get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us here on the Wednesday Drive.
If you truly care about your feet,